Hello and welcome to Anti Football Podcast. My name is Chris. As always, I'm joined by the wonderful, magnificent, the marvellous Harry Flynn, who I've kept waiting for the past hour. Very rude, he's very polite to put with my but I'm glad that he has, because we've got a lot of fucking football to talk about. Mm-hmm. Oh, fuck me, this is mad. What a mad season this has been already. And we're only, three, 4 game weeks in. It's absolutely balmy.
Balmy, that's what I mean.
You never heard someone say balmy?
Nope.
Which means mad. But I'm surprised I've not said the word balmy, to you before. It's a very Yorkshire word, is that?
I've not heard it.
Well, now you have. And if you've got any more questions about Yorkshire slang, I'll be happy. I'll be delighted, in fact.
Okay. I can't really think of any southern. Actually, we've got mush. Do you know what mush is?
We've got mush. What's mush?
It's like mate.
Oh, no, we don't use that up here.
You don't use in it either.
Some people.
A lot of people say water and bottle down here.
Well, that's just an accent, isn't it? That's not slang.
Yeah, I say
if I say I'm chuffed to bits with slang.
Well, I know what that means.
Yeah, but that's not to do with the accent.
What other slang is in the
mouth? Do you know what a pug up the lug is?
A what?
A pug up the lug.
Pug up the lug.
Yeah.
No.
It's just when you get clattered. When someone just smacks you.
Alright.
Do you know what mithering is?
Mithering?
Yeah. It's when you're moaning all the time.
Right. You can say mullered.
Mullered?
Yeah. Drunk.
Yeah.
Any others?
What
sort of one have we got down here? Dinlow.
Dinlow. Well, what's Dinlow? I think I've heard Dinlow before. What does it mean?
It's an idiot.
Hey?
It's an idiot or a twat.
Ah, right.
It's more pompy.
Yeah. Do you know what tin, tin, tin mean?
No.
It means that it isn't in the tin.
What
tin,
is tin, why tin. Is the tank not being a tin?
Well, it's in tin, tin.
What's a tin, tin?
Well, it's in tin, the tin.
Yeah, but why wouldn't anything be in a tin? I don't.
Well, that's what tins are for. They're holding stuff, isn't it?
Tin, tin.
Well, a tin, tin, the tin.
It isn't in the tin.
No, a tin, tin, tin.
Oh, yeah, you say tur up there, don't you? Fucking
yeah. Says you as fucking jellied eels.
I don't have jellied eels. What the fuck is that?
Oh, piss off. You've definitely had a jellied eel. Because you're a southerner.
No, I swear that's like a cockney thing.
Yeah, but you're all cockneys.
Okay.
Oh, south of bloody Leicester's cockney.
No.
Either cockney or Welsh, south of Leicester.
We have sheep's anus.
Eh?
The Welsh sheep's anus.
The Welsh have sheep's anus.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of sheep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
But they don't feed, they don't eat it with their mouth, with their penis.
right, this is a football podcast, and we spent the first 5 minutes of the recording talking about Yorkshire slang and Harry wanting to shag a sheep. I'm surprised he didn't do that in celebration after Chelsea 4 Crystal Palace 0.
I did. I played Twister with a quadruple amputee.
Oh, nice.
That was from last week.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and think of another, weird, I don't know, analogy that you guys have.
Go on, yeah. Go on, whilst you... I'll let you have some time to think of an analogy whilst I talk about this game. You just sit in the corner, face the wall for a little bit.
Get on my time out.
Yeah, exactly. You can think about what you've done. But, yeah, as for this Chelsea performance, it was really good. Ben Chilwell, I think, really impressed on it. Was it his debut? I think it was his late debut at the very least. Obviously, getting an assist, providing a much better alternative to both Alonso and Emerson on that left-hand side. Mendy as well didn't have too much to do, but he didn't make any mistakes, so that's already an improvement. It was just, in general, a very decent performance. Timo Werner, again, seemed a little bit quiet. At the end of the day, he wasn't relied on to score. I think that Chelsea also did well to win those two penalties. I don't think anyone can be in any doubt that they were penalties. Havertz for the second, was, very tricky, forcing Sacco to, bring him down. And for the first one as well, Tammy Abraham getting brought down by Mitchell, who has had a decent start, but he's still a young kid, he'll learn. But I do think that this Chelsea side has looked a lot better with the reintroduction of Tammy Abraham. You know, with Timo Werner coming in, obviously he's the supreme forward. But Tammy Abraham has been very unfortunate in missing out. And I think that he's still a very good forward. I mean, he got 13, 14 goals last season. I can't remember the exact amount. I think it was 13. So he's still a decent forward. And with that, though, you can't have Mason Mount on the wing. And I feel like Hudson-Odoi, he did a fine job in providing the width for this Chelsea team, but I feel like once Christian Pulisic comes back, I feel like that a Werner, Abraham and Pulisic front three with Havertz and Jorginho providing the creativity will be a very dangerous threat going forward. And with Silva, Mendy and Chilwell coming in, that defence looks a hell of a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want ideally in a midfield of Jorginho and Kovacic.
With Havertz?
Well, no, I'd play like a 4-2-3-1.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but your three midfielders would be Jorginho, Kovacic, and then Havertz, but Havertz sort of as a number 10. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, Chelsea could do with playing with a number 10 rather than with two free eights. I feel like obviously it didn't affect them too much in this game, but at times they do seem to lack that person to link the midfield and the front three. Lampard seems stubborn's the wrong word, but he seems very committed to try and make this 4-3-3 system work, but you just wonder, is it the right system considering the players that he has, coming in? You've got Ziyech and Pulisic still to play this season for Chelsea, so that's definitely something to consider for Frank Lampard, is whether a change in the system would be best suited for Chelsea. I personally believe it would, but whether he will remains to be seen.
I don't really have much else to build on that. It did take us a while to break the deadlock.
Yeah, but once you did, the floodgates did inevitably open. What did you make of Palace, Harry? Because zero shots on target, that's not great.
Well, it shows that our defence has vastly improved from the last match. Palace went from being this real on-form team with, wins against Saints and Man U, and then, well, I guess losing to Everton and Chelsea isn't something to snuff at, is it, really?
No, exactly. I know Crystal Palace's next couple of games have got a derby, and I say that with quotation marks, with Brighton. And then they've got Fulham, Wolves, Leeds, Burnley, Newcastle and West Brom all after that. So they're all games where Crystal Palace can pick up points.
Mm. Yeah. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, four shots, none on target. If a team is going to be... I think the best way to stop Palace is being completely offensive against... I think a team like Leeds are going to give them real trouble.
Yeah. You did seem to have Palace almost pinned into their own half. Because it is a very attacking lineup that Crystal Palace went with. Eze and Townsend on the wing, with Zaha and Ayew up front. So, they're four very attack-minded players there. You had them basically pinned into their own half for the majority of the match. 71% possession for Chelsea. 17 shots, 6 on target, 8 corners. You basically dominated the game, offensively at the very least.
Oh, yeah, 100%, yeah.
Yeah, I won't say Palace did anything wrong. It was just they couldn't handle the quality of this Chelsea side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was interesting as well to see Chelsea almost reverting to a sort of back three, with Chilwell pushing up high and Azpilicueta sort of tucking inside to be that third centre-half. Could that be something that Lampard tries? Because we did see last season him playing with a 3-4-3. Do you think that was something that Lampard has in his locker, or do you think that was just a case of him working with the parts that he had?
Yeah, working with the parts we had. I don't think we have enough centre-backs to accommodate that, or at least decent centre-backs. Because we've signed that Malang Zaha, but he's gone out on loan to Porto.
Yeah. You've got Zuma and Silva, who played in this game. You've also got Rudiger and Christensen, who didn't play, and Tomori as well. Azpilicueta as well can fill in more than capably in a three-man defence at centre-half. So you do have options there if Lampard were to go to that well.
Yeah, I do not want to see Christensen at the back.
Hmm.
That would be the very last result.
Not even in a back three, where his weaknesses could be hided better?
No, I feel he's detrimental to the people around.
All right.
Yeah, just a bit of a calamity. Should have sold him, and I don't know why the rumours of Rudiger were swirling. Nothing really happened about that, which is part of the reason why I think he was frozen out of the team. For. Hopefully he gets back to starting, because I think he's our second strongest centre-back behind Silva.
I like both Zuma and Tomori. I think especially Tomori has a bright future, but an on-form Rudiger is a really good centre-half. It's just we didn't see enough of him, especially last season, on form, whether that was due to his partners or whether that was just him, down to him being inconsistent, I don't know. But with Thiago Silva next to him, you would think that he would be a lot more of a regular, high-quality performer.
Should we get into the next
one? Yeah. Everton 4, Brighton 2. Brighton, yet again, putting up a valiant performance against a much better side on paper, but ultimately ending the match without any points. Brighton have looked very impressive, in my opinion, this season. It's just unfortunate that they've come up against some really good sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, they get points for being valiant.
Mm.
And you're coming up against a very informed Everton team, which is only one of two teams in the Premier League that have a 100% record.
Mm.
Which is kind of shocking. You probably wouldn't have thought of those two.
No, exactly. And this Everton team as well wasn't at full strength. We didn't see Andre Gomez or Alan feature at all. Obviously we saw Richarlison go off injured within the first half hour. So the majority of the game was played with Alex Iwobi out wide, with Tom Davies and Gylfi Sigurdsson in midfield. And they still managed to, well, not to say comfortably win the game, but they managed to hold off Brighton very well. I think Yeremina in particular had a very good game, obviously getting the goal right before half-time. It was a very good performance from Everton, and in particular, a very good performance from James Rodriguez, which, he's just started to see. Everyone talks about Calvert-Lewin being on fire, and he is. He's probably the most informed forward in the Premier League at the moment, but James Rodriguez has started the season so well, and we can't, take any credit away from it.
Mm-hmm. There's much to say on that, really. Just yet another time where Brighton were unlucky. I mean, both attempts by each team were equal, but Everton were able to get over half their shots on target. They got 6 of the 11 on target, while Brighton got 3 out of 11.
Mm.
And Brighton saw a lot of their shots being blocked. And I think in this game really highlighted the need for a new goalkeeper, because yet another massive error by Pickford that in another fixture could have cost them all 3 points. New signing, Robin Olsen, would be a starter or not?
To be honest with you, I can't see Olsen being brought in as, you know, anything more than backup, you know, like, or as a deputy for Pickford. I think he's an experienced head who's, you know, been around the block. You know, he's been at Copenhagen, he's been at Roma. He was on loan at Caligari last season. I believe he was, what's that?
Tagliari.
Yeah. You know, and he's an international for Sweden as well. So, you know, he's a capable keeper, but I can't see Ancelotti picking him over Pickford, if I'm quite honest.
Really? I thought it was when he was getting game time at Roma, he was a pretty solid keeper, if I recall.
Yeah, I'm not denying his quality. I'm just saying the fact that, you know, he's been brought in, you know, he was only on loan for start. And yeah, I feel like Ancelotti is going to go with Pickford for the majority of this season.
Where does that leave that loss all that they've got?
He seems to be stuck in limbo at the moment, Lossell. I mean, he spent last season at Huddersfield on loan, didn't he?
Yeah.
I believe so. So, to be honest with you, I can't see him ever making an Everton appearance, to be honest with you, barring some horrific injuries. Yeah, I feel like he's one of those who will end up seeing his contract out and going on a free at the end of his deal, to be honest with you.
Well, they got him on a free. Do you think the loan departure of Walcott's going to impact them? Because he had a cameo appearance in this match.
Yeah. To be honest with you, not really. I'm not overly impressed with Walcott as a player nowadays. I feel like when he was at Arsenal, he was it was very effective when used in the right ways, but I feel like nowadays, now that he's, you know, lost quite a bit of his pace, which was his main asset, I don't think he's going to be that effective. I don't think he's going to be a starter at Southampton, to be honest with you. And they've got players, you know, when, you know, apart from the front three, they've got players like Iwobi, like Bernard, who can, you know, very easily slot into that front three position. Or they could revert back to a 4-4-2 like they played the majority of last season under Ancelotti with. So I don't feel like that he will be missed at all, to be honest with you. Okay. I just feel like those last 10 minutes were Everton almost putting him in the window.
Yeah. Do you remember when he was playing striker for Arsenal? He was really good then.
I was about to say, like, he was almost similar to, like, when Danny Welbeck played for Manchester United. He did really well, you know, getting him behind, which obviously, you know, you expect with that pace. Maybe that was why Southampton have brought him in, as a sort of backup to Che Adams and Danny Ings rather than for Armstrong and Redmond. I mean, I'd be interested to see how they are deployed. How they deploy Walcott. But yeah, I don't think he'll be missed too much by this Everton side, who, you know, have to be considered contenders for Europe at this point. I mean, in a roughly about a week's time, we've got the Merseyside derby, which will be a very interesting clash, the most intriguing Merseyside derby in ages.
So
it'll be very interesting to see how they do, Everton. And after that, they've got Southampton, Newcastle, two games where they should be picking up points. And then they've got Manchester United, which could be a crucial clash for European football. So, yeah, these next couple of weeks and this next coming month will be very interesting for Everton.
Yeah. There's much else to add on to that. I think we've covered all bases.
Yeah. Are we going to move on to Leeds and Man City then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go on, what were your thoughts then?
That City are miles away from the team that they were last season, and not much of a change from last season, barring the... Well, actually, that's a lie, because David Silva seems to be a massive hole in midfield. And obviously the loss of Sane doesn't really impact them that much, because he was injured for the whole of last season and got quite a bit of money for him. And it seems that without a recognised striker, they're really struggling in that final third.
I think that is a problem that Man City haven't addressed, is they've lost David Silva and Leroy Sané, two big sales, and they haven't really replaced him. I mean, Ferran Torres, you know, could be one for the future, but he's nowhere near as good as a fit Leroy Sané is. And Phil Foden is definitely going to have a lot of responsibility this season. Obviously, Pep has a lot of faith in him to step up into that David Silva role. Like you said, I wonder if they would have been better off, you know, playing Sterling and Mahrez out wide and giving, like, Delap or Palmer a chance up front, like, you know, he has done in the Cups. I just don't feel like Man City have addressed the right positions. Like, they've still got Benjamin Mendy at left-back, for example. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised, as we did in this game for the last 20 minutes, to see Nathan Ake be used more as a left-back than a centre-back. I feel like I don't think City have improved in this transfer window.
No, they've gone back.
Well, I won't say they've gone back. They have brought in some shrewd signings. I think Ruben Diaz will be, you know, a very good addition. And I feel like if he can get a good partnership with Laporte, then that could be a very good centre-back partnership. But they still have a lot of positions where they haven't addressed.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, I feel they've gone backwards because they haven't added to a very thin squad. Mm. I mean, yes, they signed Ruben Diaz, but that was part of a swap deal with Otamendi. So it was defender for defender. So if...
But it is an upgrade.
Yeah, it's an upgrade, yeah, but that's... Laporte is injury prone, as we know. So, and Mendy is injury prone as well. So what they're going to do, they're going to have Ake at left back and then stick Fernandinho back in centre back.
Potentially, yeah, maybe John Stones goes back in there. Maybe Rodri. We've seen him play at centre back a couple of times last season. I mean, Laporte and Diaz could be a good partnership, but like you say, it all rests on Laporte keeping fit, which he hasn't proven that he's able to do consistently.
Midfield significantly weaker with the loss of Silva. Because, yes, they've still got De Bruyne, and yes, Foden is still improving. But in terms of other options, there's literally Fernandinho, Gundogan, who I don't rate, and then you've got the... Does Liam Delap play centre mid?
Liam Delap's a forward.
Right.
You've got Bernardo Silva, who can play in that role as well, even if it's not his best position. We have seen him be deployed in a position similar to Kevin De Bruyne's recently.
Okay. But then you're sacrificing a winger, and then without a recognised striker. It just seems like everybody's got to play a second role just to try and fill in the gaps of this really broken down team.
Which, when you consider the amount of money that Pep Guardiola has spent on this Man City team, not that it's a bad thing spending money, but when you consider the money that has been spent, you shouldn't be having to play players out of position.
Well, I'd love to know how much has been spent versus how many players brought in. Liverpool don't spend... Well, they spend a lot, but they bring in players that are worth their money, and they get some pretty good free signings like Milner and Adrian, whereas Man City never look into that market unless it's like Scott Carson.
And that was basically just to fulfill the homegrown quota, if I believe so. You look at Liverpool, and you see them commanding, you know, 20 million for Dominic Solanke, 20 million for Jordan Ibe, 25 million for Rhian Brewster. You know, the dead wood of the club, they managed to shift on for a good fee, and then they bring in superior players for the same fee. I mean, you know, we saw Solanke and Ibe both went for 20 million. Well, Mane, Salah and Jota have all been £30 million each. You know, Thiago's been 20 million. So Liverpool are improving constantly by not having to spend too much money. Whereas Man City are spending lots of money and it feels like that team is stagnating a bit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because they're not investing in their future. It doesn't seem like their academy is all that great outside of Foden.
Yeah. But this isn't to take anything away from Leeds, though. You know, Leeds played very well during this game, and there were times where they could have gone on and won it. I know, particularly in the first half, I feel like Leeds were dominant during this game, and I was really impressed by the performances. Really, you know, backs up what I was saying earlier in the season, not to, you know, blow me own horn too much, but, you know, like I said back then, Leeds won't be in any sort of trouble this season. There will be lots of teams that finish below Leeds. There are lots of teams that have performed worse than Leeds. I feel like they've recruited very smartly. And, you know, they've got, under the guidance of Bielsa, who is obviously a very good tactician, you know, I feel like they'll do very well this season. Would they do, you know, as good without Bielsa? I don't think so. But at the moment, they have got Bielsa. So, you know, I think they'll do perfectly fine. I think they'll be perfectly capable.
Yeah. I'm just looking at how much each team has spent in England. And Leeds have a net profit, or rather net spend, of 96.1 million.
Yeah.
Quite a few players, actually. They brought in Rafinha on the final day. Rodrigo, Gigarente, Helder Costa, Islam Meslier, Ruben Koch, Joel Gerhardt, and Jack Harrison.
Yeah.
And they didn't, I don't think they let go, did they?
What's that?
They didn't let anyone go unless a loan expired.
Well, I know, obviously, Ben White went back to Brighton. Yeah. But that's the only big departure that I could think of. Yeah, I think they've done really smartly. What's that?
They're rumoured to go in for more players. They want Cantwell.
Yeah, I mean, obviously clubs have until the 16th of October to sign players from the EFL. And you have got a lot of quality in the Championship. You know, I'm surprised that players like Cantwell and Buendia and Josh King, David Brooks, Saïd Benrahma, they're players that are all in the Championship waiting to be bought by Premier League clubs. I'm surprised that no one's got in for him yet, to be honest with you. Ismail Sarr, that's another one. I knew there was someone. I mean, the whispers have been Liverpool, but I feel like the signing of Diogo Jota has sort of put an end to those rumours. I'm not sure, to be honest with you, but I think he gets into a majority of Premier League sides, Ismail Sarr.
I've seen Joe Rodon or Rodon linked with Spurs, Swansea.
Yeah, I mean, he's a decent little centre-half. I mean, he's 22, got a lot of time to improve, and Spurs do need a centre-half. He wouldn't walk straight into that Spurs team, but I feel like it wouldn't be a bad sign-in for him.
Okay.
And especially with Spurs already going through the Europa League, they're going to be stretching that squad to the limits, so they could do with some extra bodies, especially considering they haven't really replaced Yang Vertonghen. They haven't signed a centre-back.
Oh, yeah. Are you not allowed to sign anyone from the Premier League again?
No, it's just clubs from the AFL, so no Premier League teams and no overseas teams.
So a Premier League team can't sell to a Championship team?
No, they can do business between the Football League and the Premier League. Just you can't go from Premier League to Premier League.
Right, okay, gotcha. What about loans?
What, from Premier League to Premier League?
Yeah.
No, it's that window has shut.
Right, okay, gotcha.
But have you got any more thoughts on the Leeds and Man City game?
just yet another week where I'm completely wrong about Leeds.
And I don't know why I chose you, really. I mean, you really know fuck all about football. Why did I choose you to be a fucking podcast host?
I don't know all about EFL.
I mean, if Freiburg come into the Premier League, I'll trust your instincts more. I mean, we'll skip over this next game and we'll go to Leicester and West Ham. No, I'm joking. It was a shit performance. Oh, God, that was depressing. Start with the positives. Good goal from Westwood. Always the positives from a Burnley end, anyway. Good goal from Ashley Westwood. From, like, the kickoff at the second half to their second goal, I thought we were the better team. Ashley Barnes tried hard. That's about it, really, with the positives. Yeah, we were shit. St. Maximin tore us apart. We made Newcastle look like prime Barcelona. Pope had a stinker. Yeah, the international breaks come at the right time for us.
Who have we got next?
We've got West Brom away. And then after that, it's Spurs and Chelsea. So the West Brom game is a must win because we cannot go six games without getting a point. That would, you know, be almost certain relegation.
I just look at your team. It's just really thin on the ground.
Yeah, and that's the thing where we haven't improved in terms of signings. You know, it's just...
It's not even a case of improvement. I mean, like, you need numbers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, it's awful. Like, you know, I think of Burnley as a house, right? Say there's a street with 20 houses on. And the other 19 houses, they're all getting, you know, they're getting extensions put in, they're getting new conservatories, they're getting new kitchens put in, you know. Meanwhile, we don't even have double glazing windows. You know, the plumbing's all falling apart.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's just bad. It's just genuinely bad. Like, yeah, we signed Dale Stevens. Yay, Dale Stevens. All that means is that Josh Brownhill is forced out wide where he's shit. Like, I pray that Ben Mee is back for the West Brom game because Kevin Long is a fucking awful defender. Like, it's just...
He's an awful defender, sorry?
Kevin Long, he's god-awful. Like, we need Ben Mee back. Like, he's not going to be back for a while, then bring in Craig Dawson, you know, who we've been linked with, or bring in Ben Davies or Joe Worrell. You know, any of those centre-backs would improve us.
Ben Davies, what?
Preston Ben Davies, not the Spurs Ben Davies. And we need another winger. Like, we can't keep forcing one of our best, most dynamic, most creative players in a position where he's not comfortable. That's what we did with Scott Arfield. That's what we did with Jeff Hendrick. Both of those players left for free. You know, we paid £13 million for Jeff Hendrick. We played him out of position, and then he went. You know, I don't want that to happen to Josh Brownhill. He's been one of our best players post-lockdown. He's been absolutely class. I don't want to force him out wide to accommodate Dale Stevens. Like, Dwight's been a bit shit as well. Like, he's not been making the runs. He's not been as explosive as he has been, you know. Like, we're just missing some very important players. Goodmanson and Brady are both playing international games, so hopefully they will be fit for the game against West Brom, which Goodmanson especially will be a big return for us. But the biggest one is Ben Mee. We need Ben Mee back. And if not Ben Mee, we need to sign a defender. You know.
Me? Nathaniel Klein?
Well, not even necessarily a right back. Like, I think Bardsley and at the moment are fine. Like, we do need a long-term solution, and Klein isn't a long-term solution. But at the moment, I think they're fine. We have got a lot of free agents currently that, you know, would be, you know, well, I'm not going to say there would be good signings for us because a lot of them wouldn't be realistic. But there are a lot of very good free agents at the moment, you know. You look at the likes of Klein, Sturridge, Welbeck, Garay, Wilshere, Mario Mandzukic, Balotelli, you've got Mendes Lang, you've got what's his name, Defoe, Duncan Watmore, you know, you've got a lot of big names who are available for free. Now, obviously, we're not going to go in for all of them. I don't think we should go in for any of them, to be honest with you. But there are options there. And if we can't afford, which is bullshit, by the way, it's saying we can't afford to sign players. But if we can't afford to sign players, then at least get a free agent.
You don't want Pata?
Not really, no.
You want Mandzukic?
Well, do you really think Mandzukic would come to Burnley?
No, but he'd do a good, he'd do a job.
Well, he'd be all right, Mandzukic, if we signed him, but he wouldn't come.
What do you mean? He used to play for Juve.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, he wouldn't come.
What do you mean? Edgar Davis plays for Barnet. Do you want Yaya Sanogo?
I'd rather not. I would rather not.
Andrew Sermon is available on a free.
Oh, God. We were linked with him as well.
Yeah. Christ.
I don't want a 35-year-old midfielder who wasn't good enough for Bournemouth.
Alan Halilovic, former Barca, that really didn't work out.
Wasn't he, like, proper injury? Am I making that up?
No, he, I think he was.
Which, you know, we don't need to put more pressure on our medical team.
He's meant to be the next big thing. Do you realistically think you're going to sign anyone?
No, do I fuck? We are not going to sign a single soul before the 16th of October, you know? Like, on deadline day, you didn't even have, you know, people frantically ringing up Burnley saying, oh, what's going on, what's happening on deadline day? No, not were happening. They'd all gone home. You know, the Burnley journalists were told to stand down on transfer deadline day at 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock? That is just, that is disgusting. You know, we're not getting any explanation. I mean, fan communication in general is horrific with Burnley. But we're not getting any sort of communication to the fans about, you know, the business or all, like any dealings, you know, it's just, you know, and I'm not saying we need to get, like, Tony Khan style, oh, we tried to sign a centre-back, but we couldn't because of coronavirus. Like, you know, but Brighton, for example, had an interview with director of football just explaining the business they did in the summer. Like, that's all we want. You know, we just want a bit of communication with the fans because we've had nothing so far.
So have you accepted you're going to go down?
Well, I've not accepted it yet. I mean, we are only 3 games in, you know. But, you know, we are in danger. We are in serious danger of going down.
But you're not even pick up, like, Wigan players on a cheap.
Well, that's the thing. Because we always leave our business till late, you know, all the best Wigan players are already gone. You know, you look at Geltart, you look at Depay, like, they've all gone. Anthony Robinson, that's another one. It's all gone. We always leave his business too late, and then we're frantically struggling. And Mike Rigg has done nothing for this. He's done absolutely nothing except steal a wage. You know, meant to identify targets. Oh, I'll tell you who I'll identify. Dale Stevens, who we tried to sign before I even was at the club, so I didn't really identify him. I'll tell you, I'll also identify Jay Rodriguez, who, if you asked any Burnley fan on the street who would be your number one signing, it would have been Jay Rodriguez. You know, that's just common sense. I'll tell you who else I'll identify, a 38-year-old Peter Crouch who was warming the bench in the Championship. We'll bring him in when we're bottom of the league in January and sell Sam Vokes. You know, I'll tell you who else I'll identify, a 32-year-old Eric Peters. Like, joke. I'll tell you who I'll identify. I'll identify Will Norris, who wasn't good enough for Ipswich Town in League One.
Oh, my God. You know,
League One, Peterborough United have spent more money than established Premier League club Burnley this transfer window. We've had 5 years of Premier League money, and Peterborough United are outspending us.
Jesus.
Joel.
Yeah, but Brighton didn't spend a lot, and they're looking...
Yeah, but that's because, A, they already had a young, exciting, dynamic squad. And B, they brought in players for cheap.
Mm.
You know, we haven't made any signings. I wouldn't be mourning if we'd brought in players for cheap. But we haven't even done that. And I don't care what anyone says about, oh, coronavirus, Burnley, we're going to go bust. No, we weren't. And I'm sorry, if we cannot afford to spend more than £1 million when we got £2 million for Ben Gibson loan, then you're obviously handling the finances wrong. I don't know what to say. Anyway, we'll move on before I pop a bloody blood vessel. And we'll go to Leicester and West Ham.
Harry Wilson. Yeah, what the hell happened when that Harry Wilson did?
Oh, we didn't want to pay. We offered 12 million. They said we want 15, and we said no. Simple as that. You know, joke that we weren't willing to pay £3 million more. But, you know, that's how it goes. You know, as a Burnley fan, you have to learn not to get excited about any signings, any potential signings, you know, because just won't happen. You know, I've got no faith in the takeover happening now. Like, yes. But we've brought in Anthony Mancini, so the future is bright, folks.
Is that the Andrews lad?
Yeah.
He doesn't even play.
Exactly. He's coming to our under-23s on loan.
Okay. I like the guy that Wolves got. I ignore
him. Yeah, I think he's
I saw him against PSG, even though they lost 6-1.
They lost 6-1.
He was they did lose 6-1. He was tearing holes in their midfield when he was practically the only player going forward.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's get into...
Yeah, what were your thoughts on this?
What the fuck happened from last week to that game?
No idea.
It's crazy. How did you beat... What was the score? Against 5-2 against Man City.
5-2 against City, yeah.
Christ, and you lose 3-0 to West Ham. Who, in fairness, did beat Wolves 4-0, but...
Yeah, but they didn't even manage a single shot on target, Leicester.
Yeah, mad.
They had 70% possession and couldn't manage one shot on target.
Shocking. Couldn't even... Yeah, they had 147 attacks and didn't get a single shot on target. Well, it does show the clinicality of West Ham to get 14 attempts off with 31% possession.
I really like Jared Bowen as well. Was by far the best player in the Championship, in my opinion, when he played there. That was in a poor Hull City side as well. So, you know, it's no surprise to me, at least, to see him doing really well in this West Ham team. He just completely isolated James Justin. I don't think Leicester play well with the three at the back. They had the majority of the ball. They just couldn't create anything, which is a huge surprise considering how dynamic this Leicester team usually is. I mean, I feel like they were missing, they were missing Madison and Didi. They were missing some key players in the centre of the park. But still no excuse, because the team that they have, you know, Tielemans, Barnes, Perez, it was still a very decent side that should have done a lot better. At the very least, got a shot on target.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I just feel Bowen really grown into his own. Because just after they signed him in January, people thought he was overhyped and it was quite a major adjustment. But now he's really, you know, I don't know what the term is. I know, he's just exploding. And it doesn't seem to stop Mikel Antonio.
Antonio's just performed really well as well. Post-lockdown, I mean, he got, 7 goals last season after lockdown. He obviously has come into his own.
Mm-hmm. They kind of do lack in the striking department, with Haller being the only realistic backup.
Mm.
And he's been extremely poor.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the £40 million that West Ham paid for him hasn't been repaid, I'll say.
No, I mean, he has scored against Championship teams in the Carabao Cup. Doesn't quite
that. You'd expect a £40 million striker to be able to score in those types of games.
Also, because of the success that West Ham have got from Suček from Sparta Prague, they went back there and bought Kofal. So it could be interesting how he does.
I feel like the Suček coming in was on a permanent. Was a very, it was a no-brainer, basically. It was West Ham's best performer last season, post-January. He's brought a real new dimension to that midfield.
Mm-hmm. Box-to-box midfield are very intelligent in both halves. Speaking of another sort of massive signing that they've had was Felipe Anderson, who's now gone loan to Porto.
It hasn't really worked out with Felipe Anderson. Been a bit shit, really. He came in with a lot of hype to be the Dimitri Payet replacement, but it never worked out. He never really stepped up to be that top quality player that Payet was, and it looks like Bowen is turning into. So a loan move is. What's that?
His first season was good.
His first season was decent, but after that, we have seen a drop off.
Yeah, I mean, last season, 25 games, one goal, as opposed to the year before, 36 games, 9 goals, which was more than he got in the previous season for Lazio. I've seen that West Ham are linked with Josh King, so if it looks like they're digging into their pockets yet again, he could be an eccentric player up top, and, you know, putting away 4 goals against past Wolves and then 3 against Leicester, I think it could be a massive season for West Ham fans, and it looks like they want more goals despite going 7-2 games.
I feel like King would be a very good signing. It would allow Haller to probably be let go. After that, you know, it's not really worked out for him. Maybe a loan move could potentially try and raise his value. But yeah, I feel like King would be a lot more risk-free as well. He performed really well in a poor Bournemouth side, let's be quite honest with ourselves. Even if it was mainly defensively, Bournemouth had issues, you know. You can't have a world-class attack and go down. But yeah, I think King did relatively well. I think he's a Premier League player. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see him at West Ham and where he fits in, whether it be out wide or up front.
Yeah. Another player that they've let go up top, also thinning the attack and options, was Albana Jesse. He's gone to Celtic.
Yeah, he didn't really do much in a West Ham shirt, to be honest with you.
I'd love to know how much they've wasted strikers. Over the years, they've had Hernandez. Would you say Yarmolenko's a flop?
I would, yeah. I mean, he's nowhere near the player that he was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Who else have they? Outside of the ones that we mentioned.
Carroll.
Oh, Christ, yeah. Was he on a pay as you play?
I don't think so. That might be Newcastle.
I remember when they had like players like... Who's the Senegalese striker they had?
Diafra Sakho.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, he was all right. And they had, what's his name as well?
Had, Marco Enevalencia.
Yeah, that was his name, Enevalencia.
Yeah, they've had, would you say Fornals as a flop? As an attacking?
Well, how much did he cost?
25 million.
25 million, so, you know, by West Ham standards, it's not too much. And in this current market, it's not too. So, you know, we'll see how he performs this season. He's performed well in these 2 games against Wolves and Leicester. So, you know, we'll see how he gets on. He seems to, now that West Ham are playing with a more defined number 10 role, it does seem like he's sort of growing into that, even though he had a pretty slow first season there.
They've had Lucas Perez.
Oh, ah, yeah.
Marco Arnautovic was good until he refused to play.
Yeah.
They had Andre Ayew.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Lanzini, Gökhan Töre, Sofyan Feghouli, Ashley
Fletcher. Feghouli, bloody hell.
Yeah. He's in the last 5 years.
Oh, he was that Turkish player they had.
Turkish player?
I remember they had a Turkish player, I think.
Oh, they had Simone Zaza. He was shit. What, Gökhan Töre?
Yeah, that was his name.
They had Jonathan Kaleri, Nikisha Yelovich, Victor Moses, Matty Jarvis. Yeah, I mean, they don't... Oh, he was all right for them.
He was all right.
Real hit and miss is up top.
Yeah. And their best striker in the past few years is someone who started out as a right back. So
yeah. And these players haven't been cheap by any means.
Oh, no.
I mean, they do, when they sell them, they do get a bit of money back. But it's not a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Aye. Got what else you want to add? Or are we going to move on?
Yeah, we'll
go to Southampton and West Brom. West Brom with a change of system. Obviously... changing from the 5 at the back to a four at the back, 4-5-1 almost. Obviously, the suspension of Kieran Gibbs will have played into that. Obviously, you know, they played. Did they play five at the back against Chelsea? I think they did. Interesting decision when, you know, their first point of the season came against Chelsea playing five at the back, to switch it up against Southampton. Perhaps they were trying to hit them more on the break. What's that?
They leaked three goals and threw away a new lead. Cause
you know, they did score three. They got a point against Chelsea with that system, you know, so.
Yeah, but they should have, but in hindsight. I found this game boring, did you?
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't too much to talk about. I mean, it was a pretty dominant Southampton performance. That's all you can really say, isn't there?
The goals were good when they came.
Yeah.
But a few and far between. So, Genepo, he scored with a Cruyff turn with his back to goal and then smack and one. And then Romeu, who very, very rarely scored, hit like a lovely looping volley.
And Romeu's more of a number six than a dynamic midfielder. He's sort of taken over that Højbjerg role. So it was interesting to see him pop up with a goal.
Yeah. He never got more than one goal in a single season, so. That's kind of mad. So, I thought Saints were really good. Kept West Brom at bay. Kept the ball safely. Didn't give away the ball too many times. And even when they did, West Ham didn't pose much threat, as, you know, considering how lethal they were on the counter against us. This was a far different side, and I didn't expect this Saints side to win this game before kickoff. I thought West Brom were the team in form, carrying all the momentum. But then again, conceding three goals, one at the death, is going to take all the wind, though.
I think with the addition of Theo Walcott on deadline day, Southampton have made some pretty smart transfers. I mean, even if I'm not that impressed with Walcott, he will offer something to this Southampton side, even if it's just a rotation option or competition for a place. I feel
they've
like...
only made three signings.
I feel like Salisu, once he eventually comes into the side, will be good. Kyle Walker-Peters has been a decent little signing for what he is, which was it was part of a swap deal, so he's coming in on permanent to replace Cedric Suarez, who, you know, wasn't great for Southampton. And Theo Walcott coming in on loan as well is, you know, a decent little signing, along with Diallo, who, from what I've heard, is a very promising youngster. So they've made some decent signings there.
Yeah.
As well as letting go of either on, you know, loan or on a permanent, some dead wood, you know. Carrillo, Wesley Hoot, Bufal, Elianusse.
I felt dead wood when he was fairly regular last season.
Who's that?
Well, I wouldn't call Bufal dead wood, considering he was semi-regular last season.
But, you know, it was... Bufal is someone who is indicative of the older style of Saints Windows, you know. He was on, you know, high wages by Southampton standards. And, you know, considering he didn't really repay that in terms of performances, I feel like he was someone who had to be shifted on.
Yeah, but Saints have to be...
Saints what?
Saints have to be rich, because they've got rich owners, and the amount of players that they've sold on for, you know, high fees, you know, and not really reinvesting it in the team.
Yeah, but why would you keep players on high wages when they're not performing?
That's a good
point. Rich or not. It didn't make sense for Man United to keep hold of Alexis Sanchez, even though the Glazers are, you know, both some of the richest owners in football, and Man United are one of the most profitable clubs in football. it didn't make sense to keep on Sancho was... high wages when he wasn't performing, and it's the same with Bouffal.
I think Saints could have done a lot better than just the four times.
I mean, they did. That was a team that did finish 12th last season.
Yeah, they should be. They were very that they had manager stick about after that 9-0 loss.
Yeah,
and that things was fired up.
I feel like the only thing that I would do differently in this window, if I was Southampton, to be honest with you, is keeping all the Harrison Reed. But apart from that, I feel like, you know, they finished 12th, and they've got a decent little squad of Southampton. They didn't need to tinker with it too much. I think they'll quietly have a decent season, Southampton.
I think they'll do worse.
Really? I'm not saying, you know, top half or pushing for Europe or anything. But I think, you know, a decent 10th, 11th, 12th finish for Southampton. You know, that's a decent season.
Yeah, but considering they finished 7th once.
Yeah, once.
And they
we finished 7th on a lot once. West Ham finished 7th. That doesn't
mean you're not saying,
pushing
their constantly. You're not sitting on a lot of money like the West Hams are. Saints are sat on a lot of money. They know they can when their players go, they go for a lot of money. And they're bringing in these, like Mane, they brought in from relative obscurity. He's now one of the best players in the world. They have a very good scouting system, and yet they don't utilise it. Danny Ings, they, well, picked him up for, what, 7 million? But one of the best strikers in England.
Like, I thought it was like 20 million.
Really? 18 million. Shit. Yeah.
But,
so yeah, that's a bargain. I don't get how Liverpool are able to get away with selling these players for such ludicrous fees.
I mean, obviously, Daniels has proven that he's worth a lot more than that, but, you know.
Yeah.
I still don't understand how Dominic Solanke was sold for more than Danny Ings. Like, even at Burnley, Danny Ings showed his quality. I think he got, like, 9 Premier League goals with him. So, you know, in his team with Ross Wallace and Matty Taylor as the, you know, wingers. Like,
I feel like...
I just want Vings back. I really just want Vings back. I want that 13-14 season back. That's all I want. I don't want this shit to what we have now.
I feel like this season isn't going to be won by the team with the best squad. I feel like it's going to be won with the most... The team that's got the best resistance against the attrition. Because these games come in thick and fast. You know, we're going to do an international break. Are we even doing a winter break in February?
I don't think so. I could be wrong. I don't think
it just seems like, what do they get, a few weeks off, then they went back into a full season, and now they're still going ahead with the likes of the League Cup, FA Cup, Champions League, Europe, etc.
Yeah. And obviously, not the season, but the season after, we're going to have the World Cup. So,
Is this season finishing earlier to accommodate Euro 2021?
Oh, yeah, Euro 2021 as well. I forgot about that.
Yeah, AFCON.
I don't think so. The season just runs through AFCON, doesn't it? Because Liverpool will be losing Mane and Salah during that time.
I think they're perfectly fine with that then.
Well, I won't say perfectly fine, considering they're two of the best players in the world, but...
Yeah, I know, but that defence... Well,
we'll get into that defence.
yeah.
But first we'll go to Arsenal beating Sheffield United 2-1. What were your thoughts on this?
I can't really poke many holes into this Arsenal team. I think the best bit of business they've done was keeping Aubameyang. I don't know whether they're playing like a 5-2-3 or a 3-4-3. Maybe a 3-4-3.
Well, it seems to be a 3-4-3, which can transform into a sort of lopsided 4-3-3 with either Saka or Maitland-Niles coming into the midfield three.
Right, okay. I mean, yeah, I don't really rate Pepe, but his goal was excellent.
Yeah. And that's the thing with Pepe. He shows flashes of quality, but... For him to be worth £72 million, he has to do this consistently. And with Willian seemingly keeping him out of the team for the time being, I wonder if we're going to get a run of games for Pepe where he's given a chance to show consistent quality.
I don't get
why... Because last season, he did seem in and out of the team as well, particularly under Emery. He was never given a consistent run of games up front with both Aubameyang and Lacazette. So it'll be interesting to see if he does this season.
Yeah, I'd even start that Martinelli over him. I know Martinelli's injured, but when he's fit, I'd even start him over Pepe. I mean, when Sheffield United scored, I thought they really had it behind them to perhaps go on and get the equaliser. But for that sort of prize ago, I thought I couldn't really poke many holes, in, if any, in the Arsenal team.
Yeah, definitely. I think the addition of Thomas Partey as well is a very shrewd one. It will definitely improve that Arsenal midfield. I mean, we've been saying for ages that Arsenal have lacked a spine. You know, even going back to the days of Wenger, they've lacked a solid spine in the centre of the park. And Partey can be that, you know. We've seen him at Atletico play as, you know, all across that midfield, you know, from a number six role, sitting in front of the back four as a ball winner, to pushing into the box and getting goals as a sort of number 10, even a sort of 9.5 role. So he is definitely going to improve the Arsenal midfield and increase the options that Arsenal can have. You know, you can have Xhaka and Partey as a midfield two, for example, who would be a lot more creative, or you could have Xhaka sort of pushing Ceballos, you know, pinging balls back and forth, whilst Partey is more of a ball winner slash ball carrier, you know. So it definitely improves that Arsenal midfield, and definitely improves the range of options that Arteta has.
I think that spine's vastly improved as well with Gabriel Magalhães.
Obviously, Arteta feels that William Saliba wasn't ready for Premier League football yet. A potential loan move to Brentford is doing the rounds at the moment. And yet, I mean, he has done well since coming in as Gabriel. And he's seeming to improve the team around him. He's improved David Luiz, who hasn't made a major mistake this season so far. And yeah, he's done all right.
I don't think there's much else there.
I mean, we'll skip through this next game, I'll be honest with you, because we've left you waiting long enough for the two big games. But, you know, we'll quickly cover Wolves and Fulham. Bit of a, you know, dead game, I'll be honest with you. Wolves getting a deserved win over Fulham, I'll be honest with you. There's not really too much to discuss. we'll just go straight into what you've probably come to this podcast to hear about. We'll start off with the first one of the two games, which was Spurs absolutely hammering Man U at Old Trafford, 6-1.
I think I thought it might have gone the other way, given that Spurs opened the opportunity to Man United within 34 seconds. I thought, oh, here we go, it's a Man United hammering, because Bruno Fernandes, obviously, perfect penalty record, puts it away. And then, I mean, this isn't one for the defenders to look at, because it's dreadful.
Fucking
at the back.
I mean, Harry Maguire costs more than Virgil van Dijk. I'll just let that statement. Harry Maguire cost Man United more than Liverpool paid for Virgil van Dijk. Awful. Absolutely awful. I know there's the Man United tax. I know that Man U are always going to pay more for players because teams know they have money. But it's just remarkable that Maguire went for more than van Dijk when he's an awful defender. Pulling down Luke Shaw for a Ndombele's goal is just mind-boggling to me. That Maguire is still seen by some as a good player. He's still seen by some as England's best centre-half, and I just don't understand it.
That must be Man United fans. That must be Man United fans. Is it? Is it only Man United fans, or is it?
Well, it's not just Man United fans.
What the fuck are they watching?
I don't know.
And Ndombele slots in a bit of a scrappy goal. Harry Kane sets up Son Heung-min. De Gea was absolutely dreadful in this match. I can't remember what Martial got sent off for.
It was the Lamella thing.
Oh, I think both of them should have got sent off.
Yeah, I was about to say, you can't send one off and not the other. They either both should get sent off or need.
Yeah.
Especially since... What's that?
Well, Lamella got a yellow. Marshall.
Yeah, I mean, especially since Lamella put the arm in the throat first.
Yeah, he provoked him, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if anyone should have been sent off, if you're only going to send off one person, surely it'd be Lamella over Martial. But I digress, you know, that still doesn't forgive Man United's terrible defensive performance, because Martial would have been nowhere near that defence.
No. Do you think if Lamella got sent off, that would have changed anything or not?
Well, I mean, it would have changed things, but I don't think we would have seen a 6-1. But I can't see Man United winning this sent off, if that's what you're asking. It probably would have been more like a 3-1.
Yeah. Well, there were 3-1 up at that. Well, there were 2-1 up at that point, sorry.
There were 2-1 up, so maybe 3 or 4-1.
Harry Kane gets a goal. I can't recall how that one went in.
That one was the thingy, wasn't it? The Bailly pass.
Oh, Christ, yeah. And then Heung-min Son puts it through De Gea's legs at the near post, where he should be beaten.
Yeah, I know. It's just awful. They're awful all around. That, like, there needs to be something changed, whether it's Solskjaer, whether it's the tactics, whether it's the players, something needs to be done. Yeah, exactly. They need a new director of football, because this transfer window, they've been appalling. You know, Cavani is a good signing. Van der Beek is a good signing. Telles is a good signing, but they haven't addressed the issues that they need. They needed a right winger, then they needed a centre-half, and they haven't improved either of those positions. And a DM as well. They haven't got a DM either.
Well, I was reading this Reddit thread. Edward Wood makes Man United a lot of money through advertisements and sponsorships. So it begs the question, why isn't he like their marketing manager?
Exactly. Keep him around if he makes you money, but
yeah,
he shouldn't be negotiating deals, especially when he's an awful negotiator. You know, look at how he handled the Sancho deal.
Yeah, if a club's asking a player for 120 million for a player of that, you know, talent, and he's only going to double as his, you know, career goes on.
Yeah.
You're going to pay it with no hesitation.
And it's not like it's, you know, I don't know, like Wigan, what I say in that. You know, Dortmund are a financially stable and thriving club. They're not going to, you know, they don't have to sell Sancho, you know. And Sancho wasn't forcing a move or anything like that. So Dortmund could afford to stand firm.
Shocking. Just
yeah, it really is. I mean, you know, like, because that Spurs team, it's still not great. I mean, you can easily catch Serge Aurier in behind. You know, Dier and Sanchez isn't a brilliant centre half partnership. You know, like, there's still
away the penalty in 34 seconds. So.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's weaknesses to that Spurs team, but Man United just couldn't capitalise on them at all. Obviously, the Martial sending off didn't help, but, you know, I can't see a way that Man United win this game even without the red card. I just think the entire team pretty much played awful. You know, there's no excuses for that.
Mm-hmm. Then Serge Aurier got in on the goals, thanks to a Højbjerg assist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's bad when a player like him puts, you know, one past you.
Yeah.
And then... about 20 minutes later, another penalty to Spurs.
Mm.
Be the second one in the game. He slots that away. And 6-1. The heaviest loss since the Manchester derby, where they lost by the same scoreline.
Yeah, it's not great. I mean, Solskjaer's tenure at Man United looks like it's potentially coming to an end. I mean, I feel bad for him, because he seems like a really nice guy. But at the end of the day, he seems too nice to be a football manager. You know, can you see... Solskjaer, you know, screaming at the players at half time.
It's not even him. He's making the best of a bad situation. It's the board, it's Edward Wood. I don't think any blame can be cast on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Well, I'm not blaming him, but what I'm saying is, you know, put Jose Mourinho in this position and Man United improve. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that the problems are entirely down to Solskjaer, but he's not helping them.
No, but this team is literally glorified penalty merchants, and I'm fucking glad that
they're not, are they? They're not. They are a group of very good players.
Is that why they only got their own goals from penalties?
Well, you know, they're not going to say no to the penalties, are they?
No, but that's how they get the
this
majority.
This is a group of very good players. You know, this is the group of players that are at Man United currently are better than the group of players than when Mourinho got them second.
I'd need to see the team and have a comparison. But just looking at the games, like how did they beat Brighton? Penalty. How did they open the scoring against Spurs? Penalty. It seems they play for a penalty every game, and that's how they win, by conning the ref. And you know, when you're letting six in, no amount of penalties is going to save you then, because they're dominating you in your
Except
own half.
For seven penalties, that might help.
Yeah, but no referee's going to give that away, aren't they?
No.
And also, you know, when a team like Spurs is...
But, you know, you can't blame them, the attacking performance, solely on those players. I mean, Martial got sent off in the 20th minute.
Yeah.
They were without a striker for the majority of that game.
Yeah, and that's true, but he's not a recognised striker. And also, I feel like that was a harsh red.
Yeah, I feel it was a harsh red as well. So we don't know how the game would have panned out had either Lamella been sent off or Martial not been sent off.
6-2 or a 6-3 then, but yeah. I still think that they would have been absolutely mauled.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Manu would have won this game without the sending off. I'm just saying I'm not going to be as harsh on them purely because of that red card. Not like this next game.
I know, just, yeah, I don't feel like... I feel like when you sack a manager using them as scapegoat, you're not... I feel like when you lose by that amount of money, you should be fining players.
Mm.
It's not like they're going to go starving, is it?
No.
Something needs to hit them hard where they go, all right, we're not playing that great. Because I remember, didn't Rashford put out an apology, like saying, oh, sorry, we played so bad?
I think so, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one player of the, you know, 14 that played. Let's get into the next one.
Yeah, I mean, I'll let you have the floor here.
Well, if you look at possession wise, that scoreline really should not have happened.
Mm.
This is the joint heaviest loss by a defending champion in the Premier League era. Do you know what the last one was?
It was in the Premier League era. No, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Man City 6, Man United 1.
All right.
Yeah. So yeah, both by a 5-goal margin.
Mm-hmm.
Sloppy, sloppy defending in every essence of the word.
Mm.
Open 4 minutes saw a very lazy, ill thought pass by Adrian, which was very heavy, picked up, then whipped back in the centre for Watkins to slot in. Is that his first Premier League goal?
I believe so, yes.
There were more to come.
Mm.
And, you know, Jack Grealish was easily man of the match.
Mm.
This
That trio of Grealish, Barkley and Watkins on that left-hand side for Villa absolutely tore apart, you know, Gomez and Trent, you know, down that right-hand side. They were easily exposed, you know, just getting caught in behind constantly to the point where, you know, it was, you know, Klopp had to take off Gomez on the hour mark.
Yeah, they were down significantly at that point.
Mm.
I think he should have made the change at half-time when they were... the second goal, I can't recall how that went in. Oh, is that one where you sort of just weaved past everyone and sort of just smashed it?
The second goal?
Yeah, from like the edge of the box, was it?
Yeah, that was the, that was just him driving, you know, infield and, you know, absolutely skinning Joe Gomez and putting it top right from Ollie Watkins.
Mm-hmm. And Salah put in a rebound in the top left corner.
Mm-hmm.
And John
the McGinn. Only positive for Liverpool was the performance of Mo Salah. You know, as expected, he played quite well. But, you know, he couldn't make up for that awful defensive display from Liverpool, which is very uncharacteristic of them. You know, you'd see him last season, you'd see him go 10 games without conceding 7. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I know this Liverpool team has been affected by coronavirus, you know, a lot more than most, you know. You've got Mane, Henderson. Was Alisson coronavirus or was that a normal injury? I think it was a normal injury.
Normal injury, yeah. Well, as of today, it said that Shaqiri got it, but that was a false positive.
Oh, right. So it wasn't a full-strength Liverpool team, but, you know, still, there's no excuse for a 7-2 against Aston Villa.
Still, you'd back this team to beat any other Premier League any day of the week.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so, because they were winning games with Adrian 1-0, because, you know, having performances akin to Alisson, you know. Then we had John McGinn score a deflected, when his strike was deflected. Do you think deflections was a reason for such a high score line? Because I believe 3 or 4 were off the back or, you know, off the foot of someone.
Well, I mean, there were definitely parts of the goals, but I don't think it was that. I don't think that was a part of, you know, the reason why Liverpool lost that.
Then Watkins slots in the header from close range to get his brace. That went to VAR, didn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. Then Andrew Robertson gets a shot across goal and Martinez makes a really good save.
Mm.
So it goes into the half 4-1 down to a team that were relegation candidates last season. Mad.
Mm. Well, I feel like they've actually... I don't know, like, they've just spent well this season, Villa. Like, as opposed to last season where they seem to just bring in bodies, this season they've recruited very smartly. You know, Matty Cash, one of the Championship's best right-backs last season. Martinez, a very good goalkeeper for Arsenal. Barkley on loan, if, you know, he can put in more performances like this, you know, will be a very great signing.
That's why I didn't want to let him go.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the problem was he was too inconsistent for Chelsea. One game he'd have a play an absolute blinder and the next he'd be non-existent. I'm sure you'd have rather got rid of Drinkwater again to Villa. And obviously Ollie Watkins, the main front for Brentford last season and obviously for Villa this season, needed because Samatta was a bit awful and Wesley is still injured. I believe he's out until November time. It's looking...
Why Mings was rated so highly. I'm starting to see why Mings is rated highly.
I still don't rate him.
Really? What about Matty Target?
Matty Target I like. I think he's a very good attacking left back. He can whip in some decent crosses. And I think, you know, he allows Grealish to cut inside a lot more, which is crucial to this Villa side. It allows Grealish more freedom.
Mm-hmm. The next guy. Oh yeah, well, former Evertonian Brudden put more salt into the wounds with his deflected strike going in. Ross Barkley getting on.
Mm-hmm.
That was funny, obviously from Chelsea perspective and the fact that he's got Mersey blue in his blood. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned, Salah being the best player on the pitch, getting another goal, and then Grealish's goal. Was this the really weird one?
That was the horrible deflection where Firmino got pressed and it took a massive deflection off Fabinho into bottom right.
Oh, okay, yeah. And then a magnificent goal from Grealish where he's one-on-one with keeper and puts it... I mean, I don't think Adrian even tried for this one.
No, I mean, he's pretty awful.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few chances afterwards with Jota and Watkins both getting chances. I think Watkins hit the bar, so it could have easily been 8.
Yeah.
Which would have been the heaviest loss, which would have been rather funny considering how dominating that Liverpool team was last season.
Mm.
So with this scoreline being topping off a very bizarre weekend, do you think Liverpool are capable of top 4, considering how exposed they were?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I still consider them the title thing.
Yeah, I'm still backing them, but it was a very bizarre weekend.
Yeah, it was just a freak result, and these freak results happen, you know. I always go back to the final day, Steven Gerrard's last Liverpool game, when Stoke beat them 6-1.
Oh, wait, Wait, was it? Did he get? No, that was against Man United. It was last ever Manchester match, and he got sent off.
Yeah, he got sent off in that. Free results happen. It's just without fans, they happen a lot more often, as we've seen two in 1 week.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of freak results, I remember Newcastle beating Spurs 5-0 on the final day. That's that.
It's very strange. I mean, you know, there's a lot of backing to this let fans in. Jesus Christ, why has my mind gone blank? Petition. That's the word I was looking for. There's a lot of backing to the let fans in petition. I can't speak for Harry, but personally. Retarded? What's that?
Are people retarded?
Retired?
Retarded.
Oh, right.
Why do fans back in?
Well, are they not? I think it's more of a case of, well, A, so that a load of clubs don't go bust, and B, if you're showing Premier League games in cinemas, surely it's safer to just let people go to the game than show it in a cinema. Premier League, letting 1,000 fans into a Premier League game is a lot safer than letting people into a cinema, which is, you know, enclosed space.
I've completely misconstrued the situation then. I've completely misconstrued it. I thought we're going to be filling up stadiums and shit, but everyone's got to wear masks or something.
Oh, no. It's stuff like 20%, 10% capacities and stuff.
Oh, okay. I'm fine with that.
No, obviously, we're not going to be filling up stadiums again.
I thought it would be like what they're doing in Japan. Like,
oh, no.
They're sensible. You know, they don't chant and all that. Over here, we're going to have drunk twats and...
Yeah.
No, that's fine. Okay. No issue with that then.
I mean, you know, I would personally encourage people to sign that petition just to help the smaller clubs.
I'd like to see Eastleigh. We won 5-1 against Barnet. Not last weekend before.
I mean, it's good that people support the local. We are seeing that quite a bit now that, I think not the majority of non-league clubs have been let back in. I know Silston, their most recent game, they beat Ghoul. Ghoul.
Is it spelt like the ghost?
No, G-O-O-L-E. Ghoul.
So like Paul, but with a G, what the fuck?
And an E on the end.
Yeah, Paul the City, yeah.
Oh, right.
You've never been to Paul, have you?
No, I've not.
Have you ever been south?
I've been down south, yeah.
Where down south?
I've been to Liverpool. No, I'm joking. I've been to London a couple of times. I've been to Southampton once. I didn't really travel much in Southampton.
Why did you go to Southampton?
Well, I went to Southampton away. Been to Luton. Reading. I've been to Reading. I've been down a couple of times. How many times have you been up north?
Never gone north of London.
You've never gone north of London?
Nope.
Oh, mate, we've got to show you some grass. I mean, I bet you've never even seen a cow in person, have you?
Yeah.
Have
you got like farms out there where you can like visit and like feed?
Yeah.
You do, right? Where it's sort of like, I don't know, it's like a theme park, but kind of with animals, I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, we've got them, but we've also got like normal farms.
Yeah, we do as well, but...
Yeah, with dry stone walls, which makes our farms superior to yours.
Why dry stone? Why is that such a iconic thing up there?
It just looks nicer, doesn't it? Looks nicer than a shitty little fence.
Okay.
And on that note, I think we'll leave you there. Have you got what you want to plug, Harry?
My butt, no. no. My Twitter, @HazardChelseaFC.
Yeah? I'll plug mine @IWGPCrispyFC, and you can follow the podcast @AntiFootballPod. I didn't fuck up the outro this time. what a mad week this has been. We'll see you lot next time.